The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Yo, 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 and welcome back to Creeps and Crimes
Podcast.
I'm Taylor.
I'm Morgan. Happy episode 151. Happy 151. Thursday.
Happy Thursday.
What's everyone doing on this fine Thursday?
Thursday. How do people in Australia say Thursday? I feel like that would be kind of one of those words. Because
I'm not really good at an Australian accent.
Me either. There's
like, actually the hardest.
The only time I can do it is like with certain words. Like mm-hmm. I act like I'm doing it when I call Nona Norna.
Norna?
Norna.
No, I still can't do it.
Norna.
Clear. That's all I got.
Clear.
Oh no.
Nor.
The water.
Wait. How do they say? They say.
Oh no. The water.
How do we? If Nikki and McKenna were here, they would immediately have it.
McKenna specifically.
Immediately.
Like that.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Holy shit.
I loved when that was like a trend on TikTok-y.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. There's been so much that's happened.
I know. Taylor was in LA. I went on a bachelorette trip.
And then like chaos ensued the second we got back.
Even before.
Well, yeah. It was literally. Okay. So we recorded 150. 2 days after we recorded 149.
Right, yeah.
So it has been a fucking hot second since you guys have heard from us.
Oh, wow.
And it's going to be over a week before they hear this. So much is going to change between then and now. Like, we're going to be completely two different people by the time you guys hear this.
Hopefully.
But you know what? Let's talk. Okay, here's a fun game we're going to play. Let's talk about everything that has happened as if it's a week away and everything's totally fine now. Morgan's house got blown away in a fucking tornado.
It's still standing.
It's still just, there.
I can't get in it. I am homeless right now. Yeah,
she is literally homeless.
I am homeless.
No. She was.
She was homeless. I was homeless.
Last week.
I only had 3 shirts from Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
2 thongs that were neon green and neon yellow.
Oh, God.
A pack of underwear that... I was looking for the underwear that you always rave about. They don't sell that at Walmart.
No, it's Kirkland.
Kirkland.
It's Costco.
It's at Costco.
Yeah.
Damn. Okay. Well, anyway, I was like, ooh, that kind of feels like, that feels pretty soft. I got them.
But are they high-waisted and good?
No.
Oh, no. That's the best part is that they're high-waisted and I always get them like 2 sizes too big.
Yeah. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
It didn't happen.
Well, I'll get you one. I'll get you a pack of my special fucking underwear.
I picked out my wedding dress. I'm obsessed with it. I love it.
Yep.
It's going to be in on time.
Yep.
It's stunning. It's everything I wanted. I wore the cutest outfit.
Yep.
We had a great time in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Everything in the apartment is fine. The brand new fucking Mac is Gucci.
The Mac only lasted us 2 weeks. 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
And guys, I'm not going to lie. Last week, I was very stressed out about it. I was very stressed out about the fucking Mac. I'm very stressed out about it.
Because
this is the one time we didn't get Creeps and Crimes on it. So the write-off people would know. And damn, they really need to fucking know.
This is the time
that they really need to know.
No, but everything's fine. Everything's fine. The insurance was
not
even an issue. They were quick, efficient.
If on the timeline of what we were experiencing last week, that you had to get a new place, then you found a sick ass place and all your furniture and everything's fine.
And I'm no longer a renter.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly where we're at. So we're looking at.
So yeah, everything's houses. Great.
Everything's fine. Good. Those 2 bitches last week, they were not good.
If you're talking to the bitch last week that looks like this, mind your fucking business.
Mind your fucking business.
I only got a toothbrush.
Yeah.
That's it.
Did you at least get your phone charger?
Yes.
Okay, thank God.
But it was because it was in my car.
Thank God.
Aaron did not have his.
No. Did he get one at Walmart?
Actually, Kevin bought him one from work.
Oh, thank God.
Well, Kevin bought me one because my phone was dead because we had to share the charger. So he got me one. So now we have 2.
Okay, good.
From the gift shop.
Fine, though.
Everything is fine.
And last week when this all happened, Aaron and Ollie were home, but they're safe.
Yeah, everyone's good. They actually sent out an email last week and they said there was no like fatalities or serious injuries.
Which is so awesome considering
that it came down on our apartment.
And only your apartment.
And only the apartment.
They're,
then lifted up and went nowhere.
Literally, it like touched down for 2 seconds on another street, but barely. And then it was gone because... I don't think anyone understands just how rare it is for a tornado to actually be created in Knoxville. Like the geography of it is like,
just, it doesn't fucking work.
It doesn't work. But Morgan moved literally on the edge of the dome. And honestly, like when you look at the large scale of that storm cells, those storm cells that came through and like fucking tore through. Very lucky.
Yeah.
Very lucky. The way that it all happened. So yeah, we're just thankful that everyone's safe.
The
to
way
go out
that
there
I knew it was bad because Aaron called you guys.
Yeah.
And Aaron is the most mellow, like,
never gets
everything
freaked.
I do is dramatic, mm-hmm. we're exaggerated. And Aaron's like my, like, bring it back down, babe. You mm-hmm. know, like, that's Aaron. But when he's freaked out and he's calling other people besides me panicked, then you know he was panicked.
The scariest thing.
That was fun.
Guys, well, I'm ready to hop into it.
Thanks for doing my notes.
Guys, yeah, I did Morgan's notes. I'm really sorry. Just go ahead up front. I don't know if they're good. I haven't done a haunting since BEK's.
I've read the first section. It sounded good.
I mean,
it did not sound like me, but it sounded like Taylor.
Sounds very much like a true crime case.
I'm going to read it like you.
Oh, how do I read it? How are you going to read it? My TikTok voice? My reporter voice?
Reporter voice.
Oh, no. Okay, Morgan, hit him.
And it is a bit of a trifecta within itself. If you're driving, throw that shit on cruise control.
If you got a glass, pour that shit up.
And let's get creepy.
Okay, guys, when we started our recordings, we were like, you know what sounds great right now? Those two blue moons that are left in my refrigerator.
Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah, thank you, Aaron, from 4 months ago. And guess what? We had
an orange.
And you know that Morgan is the queen of cutting oranges. So
there's one specific way to cut oranges. And if you fail, then you're not allowed to eat those
oranges. And the girls that get it and the girls that don't.
Period.
Sorry.
Period.
But you know when you have one beer and you finish it and you're like, oh my God, that taste is so good. It's on my mouth. I could take another one. We realized that, because it was the only two beers that Aaron left here 4 months ago.
We wanted more, but we couldn't drive. And we were recording. So it would be inconvenient to get up and be like, Logan, drive us to the store.
Right. And you guys know that once we're out of the groove, we got to stay out of the groove for about 30 to 40 hours.
Correct. 100%. So what do? We go to Drizzly.
Drizzly is here to be your partner in parties.
Meaning they're here to help you take the grunt work out of the get together so you can be a confident host and actually party at your own party. They have Sky App. Aperol.
But most importantly, they have Aperol. Drizzly is the most convenient way to buy beer, wine, and spirits. You know, that's our favorite. With delivery straight to your door whenever you want it. Drizzly is the go-to app for drink delivery.
So whenever you poured that shit up a little too much and you need a little refill, download the Drizzly app or go to drizzly.com. That's DRIZLY.com and use code CREEPSANDCRIMES to receive $5 off or $0 delivery fee off your next order.
That's drizzly.com and use code CREEPSANDCRIMES to receive $5 off or a $0 delivery fee.
Must be 21 and older, not valid in all states. Codes cannot be combined with any other offers. Not valid at all retailers. Code expires 9/8/23, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time.
Do you want to start a company but have no idea where to begin? Or do you have dreams of becoming an influencer? Well, the Life with Mariana podcast is here to help. I'm Mariana Hewitt, a Los Angeles-based influencer and co-founder of the clean skincare line, Summer Fridays. Each Tuesday, I'm talking to my friends from business owners, wellness experts, and more to share all of their best advice for you to live your best life. Make sure to tune in and subscribe to my podcast and follow me on Instagram at Mariana_Hewitt to see what's coming up each week so you don't miss an episode.
Okay, Morgan, what do you have for us today?
Okay, Taylor, today I have a PA haunting for you. PA's in Pennsylvania.
Yay.
That was actually recommended by one of our listeners, Honor, back in September of 2022. shame. I know
so
your name. That's
sorry,
us.
Babe.
Literally a year, but thank you.
Literally
Honor.
So fucking sorry.
We're so sorry.
So sorry.
And it is actually a bit of a trifecta within itself. So you're getting a little bit of everything from me today. Yay.
Yay.
This is the case of a home that is so haunted, it is actually said to be worse than Amityville. How is that even possible?
I don't think it is. But I think someone's just being a little dramatic.
A little dramatic.
You know, just adding that flair.
A little flair.
A little flair to it.
Located in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, just southwest of Scranton, is the infamous Wells House. The quaint four-bed, two-bath wooden home with gray-green wooden siding in a sweet small front yard sits at 46 South Wells Street. The home was built in 1861 by one of the first industrialists to come to Wilkes-Barre, Augustus C. Lanning, and his wife, Amanda Crystal Lanning. Augustus was the owner of an iron foundry and machine shop, who provided the city with its first steam fire engine. Huge fucking deal.
Huge big deal.
He also served as the 18th burgess, or mayor of a borough of Wilkes-Barre from 1844 to 1845. Needless to say, he was a very wealthy and well-liked guy. For sure. Boy had money.
100%.
Augustus had inherited the land on Wells Street from his mother in 1846, but waited to build his home there for good reason. This area was known for being extremely haunted, as it was the site of many wars, quote, soaked in blood and turmoil, according to the locals, who believed the land would bring nothing but pain to those who lived there. Unfortunately for Augustus, this suffering hit his family before they even moved onto the property. In 1850, just 3 years after inheriting the land, Augustus's factory burned to the ground, and his 14-year-old nephew tragically died on the property. He was tending to the horses in the barn when it was struck by lightning and caught fire. The horse died almost immediately and fell on top of the young boy. Unable to escape from under the horse, he died in the fire. That is tragic.
That is so bad.
There are very little detailed reports. However, it is stated in some that around this time, a priest was brought to the property. While there, the 54-year-old priest, for no apparent reason, just dropped dead.
And some reports say, just a side note, some reports say that he was like on, like doing something on the property, but most say that he was just walking on the sidewalk in front of it.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Just dropping dead.
Crazy.
Despite these dark and ominous warnings for what was to come, Augustus continued with his plans to build his home, moving in at the age of 52. 8 years later, in 1869, Augustus sold his company and began to reap in the reward of his life's work in his retirement. But just 6 years later, in 1875, he died at the age of 67 in his sleep. From then until the mid-1900s, the home was publicly auctioned off on three different occasions. The final auction took place in 1939, and the home sold for only $1. In each of these sheriff sales, there were six confirmed deaths on the property, two of which were reported to be suicides. In the spring of 1975, the home was purchased by a family in another auction. The buyers were Walker and Marianne Bennett. 27-year-old Walker was a radio DJ who was moving his wife and two daughters to Wilkes-Barre from New Haven, Connecticut for his career. They were excited for their new start with such a gorgeous home, but it would only be 3 years that they could handle the wrath of 46 South Wells Street. Just after moving into the home, strange things began to happen. It started with sound coming from the walls of a bedroom, scratching, thuds, knocking, and more. It sounded as if there was something living in the walls. Trying to get to the bottom of this mystery, Walker knocked down the wall to get a better idea of the source of these strange sounds. Big fucking mistake.
I would have never done that. I would have just left.
I think there's something in that fucking wall.
Let me literally rip the whole fucking wall down.
Let me tear down whatever is separating me from it.
From the dangerous situation that's scratching, thudding, and making weird sounds on the other side.
Please, be so for real. When he knocked the wall down, he found a tin box hidden in the walls. There's no animals, no hidden rooms for squatters, just a box. But upon opening this tin box, they found some ominous items. There was a red ribbon, a human molar, like a tooth, and small bones tied together in the shape of a cross.
Fuck that.
The bones were then determined to be from a chicken. After asking around and doing research, these items were believed to be a part of some sort of curse, as these items are often used by those who practice witchcraft or voodoo. There was no way to determine when this curse box was put there, by who, what for, or who for. Many people speculated that the builders had placed it in the walls back when the home was built to curse the Lanning family. However, others argue that it could have been placed there at a later date as a means of protection. Walker disposed of the tin box and what was inside, after which things seemed to chill out in the home. And unfortunately, that didn't last too long, because 2 months into 1979, the sounds returned, accompanied with various other noises and figures. It started with loud knocks and scratching sounds coming from the front door of the home, as if company had arrived. When Walker or Marion would go to answer the door, they would see a man, but he was not human. He was what they referred to as a translucent figure. The man carried a cane and stood at their front door with what they called a crooked and vicious smile. He was accompanied by the sound of heavy, man-like footsteps on the wooden floors of the upstairs. Next, the family began hearing screams, groans, moans, cries, and the voices of people talking coming from the walls of the house and the attic.
No.
Let me knock that. Let me get up there. Check it out.
Let me literally knock down the whole entire attic to see what's up here.
Let me get that tornado through, rip the roof off just to check it out.
Not the trauma.
It didn't take long for what the family believed to be the source of these happenings to appear. They began seeing a young girl walking around the home. She would walk through the walls of specifically the living room and the kitchen areas. The girl wore what looked to be a nightgown. Following her appearances, the Bennett family would watch as blood appeared on the walls and pooled onto the floor of the living room before the strong stench of decay would seep from the kitchen.
Oh my God.
That is fucking twisted.
No, could you imagine being
that
like,
is something straight out of Conjuring.
No, like you see this little ghost girl and you're like, oh, that's a fucking ghost girl. And then you're you like, look and where she just walked through the wall, there's a pool of blood that just appeared. And then as you're looking at it, oh, that's human decay.
Nice.
Perfect. Mom, what are you cooking? Like, what?
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
Gross. Walker and Marion quickly came to terms with the fact that their new, gorgeous, beautiful home was haunted. So they began digging into the history of the home once again when they came across a photo of the original owner, Augustus C. Lanning. Immediately, they recognized him as the man with the cane and the creepy smiles at their front door. He was the translucent man.
Oh.
Mandalorian. Augustus was the Mandalorian.
He was the Mando. Not Daddy Pascal, clearly.
Clearly not.
Clearly.
And this made sense to them. He built the home and he died in the home. It was his. They thought he was probably just keeping tabs on the house, teasing them a bit. No harm, no foul. They could live with some spirits as long as no one was being hurt, and that's what they did. But soon after, the spirit became more and more comfortable with making their presence known. In January of 1977, Walker was with one of his daughters in the home, walking down the stairs when she tripped. Walker watched as his daughter did not tumble down as he feared. Instead, she floated in slow motion to the bottom and was sat down upright on her feet, safe and completely unharmed. He immediately told Marianne, but was sure that no one would believe him because he barely could believe his own eyes. Except it didn't take long for his story to be corroborated. Just a month later, Marianne witnessed the same exact thing happen once again. What the couple and their daughters could not determine, though, was if they had accidentally tripped or if they were being pushed.
You know, that's a big difference. Like, right. Is it saving them from falling?
Right. Is there like an evil force that's pushing and the good guys coming in and like, let me get
you. Helping, or is something like really like shoving them just to float
make their
them
presence
down?
Though.
Right. Just to like use their energy or like test it out.
Right.
Or try to get closer to the girls and feel
right.
safe.
Or
with them.
Maybe they are tripping on their own accord and this spirit is slowing them down to keep them safe because
they're
that
feeding
needs them.
Yeah. But could you imagine seeing this? And being at home by yourself with just your kid and being like, I'm tripping decks.
What the fuck kind of brownie did I just
eat? I would just literally look at the kid and be like,
where did the snickerdoodle cookie come from?
Did it come from?
Because that
Chef
is not
tea.
A normal snickerdoodle.
Where did this come from?
Fuck. This event of their daughter's tripping was not something that they were willing to let happen again.
No.
The family called a priest to come and cleanse and bless the home, but it did nothing other than piss off the spirits that plagued them. The family became unexplainably physically ill and suffered from anxiety and severe depression.
Yeah, I would too.
Me fucking too. They did everything they could to keep the spirits happy so they could stay in the home that they loved so much, holding on for as long as they could. One night in March of 1978, that all changed. The Bennett family was sleeping when Walker was jarred awake in the middle of the night by what sounded like thunder. It was so loud and powerful that it shook the entire home. Thinking it was a storm, Walker went to look out the window, yet it was a clear night. As he made his way back to the bed, listening closely for another sound, it was as if the house erupted. All at once, the front door began violently rattling. Dishes began shattering as they crashed on the floor of the kitchen. Footsteps began pounding across the floor of the attic. and the sound of a child crying screamed through the walls of the home. That was really well written. Walker and Marion grabbed their two children and fled the home, leaving almost everything behind, taking only what they could manage to grab on their way out. The family was $40,000 in debt, and Walker had developed a severe drinking and chain smoking problem due to the stress, and the family was all put into therapy.
Girl, I would have literally smoked 32 packs in a day. I would have 15 cigarettes in my mouth at the same exact time.
I would take them all out of the pack and put them out.
I would put like a hair tie around them.
And I'd be like, yeah, we do need fucking therapy. Let's go.
Let's go. Because why am I literally smoking one pack as like my first cigarette of the day?
Right. Why am I sitting down with my coffee and ending up with a whole pack gone?
Right. Why immediately is this an Irish coffee?
They could not sell the home no matter what they tried. Nobody could sell it. Walker Bennett told his family story to a local reporter who published the story on October 31st, 1979, Halloween.
Ooh.
Their story gained massive publicity and caught the attention of the paranormal world's top investigators at the time.
Doom, doom, doom.
Mr. and Mrs. Ed and Lorraine Warren. That was so fucking ridiculous.
I hope they like in the afterlife or that's their walkout, you know, like when they came into heaven.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please introduce?
Can we get a standing ovation?
Many of you up here already know who they are. They sent you here.
What if God talked like that when we went to heaven? He had like an MC. It's like Gabriel, the angel. Gabriel's an MC. MC Gabe.
Yeah, MC Gabe.
Oh, what that's great.
In March of 1980, Ed and Lorraine arrived to the Wells house, but were unable to enter due to it being locked up after it was repossessed by the Bennett's bank. So they began walking around the property until they could be let in. There was a photo taken as the couple walked out of the home where Lorraine was holding her arm as if it was in pain. According to various reports, Lorraine then said, quote, I sense a terrible despair. The effect on people who lived in this house was very, very negative. Lorraine.
Lorraine, babe.
Whoa, 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 you'll think, whoa, whoa.
Like, bitch, what?
like a fucking corpse, Lorraine.
The reason why you know about this house is because you read just how fucking awful it was. Is that all we got here?
Right.
Is that all you have to say?
Jeez. In August of 1982, a local woman had bought the home from the bank for $20,000 and promptly moved herself and two kids in. The woman's name was Catherine Watkins. This was a high-profile purchase because of the publicity of the home and the fact that no one ever thought another soul would willingly live there. So, of course, as soon as the press caught wind of that purchase, they set up an interview with Catherine, who told them, I'm not afraid of ghosts.
I'm not afraid of the ghost.
They fucking will.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm fucking scared.
You think I'd give a fuck? I got a house for $20,000.
Joke's on you.
Yeah. I'm not that fucking worried about it.
I'm about to flip this bitch.
Yeah, clearly. I'm going to cleanse it and I'm going to flip it.
And
so.
It's going to be... I'm gonna make bank.
I'm gonna make triple the money I made on this bitch.
She explained that she and her children knew the rumors of 49 South Wells Street's horrifying history, but they didn't believe the local tales. However, Catherine and her children did experience many unexplained events while living there, which they kept no secret. Objects would move around the home, even float across rooms right in front of their eyes. Electrical appliances like the TV and lights would turn off and on all on their own. Doors and cupboards would swing open while no one was near them. Sometimes they would be woken up by their bed violently shaking in the middle of the night. And naturally, they would hear various sounds throughout the home. Despite this, it never bothered Catherine. She raised her children there and continued living in the house for 30 years until her death in October of 2012. Catherine left the home to her daughter, who chose to put the house up for sale because her daughter's fucking traumatized.
Yeah, her daughter was like, you know what? I am scared.
Actually, Mom, I'm fucking scared.
Mom, I'm fucking scared.
Mom, there was monsters in my closet.
Yeah, Mom.
Like, for real.
Mom. Like, for real ones, though, you know?
In December of 2013, her daughter sold the haunted home to Tim Woods, a well-known ghost hunter and founder of Live Sci-Fi. After he investigated the home with his paranormal team and deemed that it was, in fact, actually haunted. From then to February of 2014, he and his team conducted several investigations, documenting everything on film. They did many live streams of their investigations, the longest one being 30 Days of Woods and his ghost hunting friends taking turns staying in the home.
No.
Which they posted on their YouTube channel. One of the most watched videos being of a 48-hour long live stream where viewers can watch as Woods was allegedly hit in the stomach and others on his team had their clothes tugged and scratches visible on their skin. After concluding his four-month-long investigation of the home, Tim Woods published his findings and investigation, concluding in an article he published on livesci-fi.tv. Quote, That house is haunted by a demonic presence that cannot be removed, nor is it safe for anyone to live in. End quote. Woods kept the home and only allowed it to be used for professional paranormal investigations, which gave the home much publicity, aka making this a place that amateur ghost hunters and local teenagers fiend over.
Yeah.
To try and keep the public away and track the home's activity, Tim Woods installed security systems, cameras, and so many private property signs, which is essentially like putting a do not touch sign on a random object in your home and expecting people not to touch it after telling them how fucking awesome and cool it is.
Yeah, like, oh my God, don't touch this. But when you do, like, it's just like the best texture. It feels so cool. It like right. shocks you a little bit on
but
your
don't
hand.
Fucking touch
but
it.
But don't even look at it.
Just after 3 a.m. on Wednesday, July 25th, 2018, police were called to the Wells home after the security alarm was set off. When they arrived, they found a 30-year-old local man outside of the home who was trying to rip the wooden boards off the back door of the property with a crowbar and told police that he was breaking in to ghost hunt. But that was not all they found on his person. The man was carrying a Bible, brass knuckles, a pocket knife, and he had a 24-inch sword tied to his back. Sorry, let me fucking machete this guy. What are you going to do? Let me sword fight the demon.
Like, it's translucent. It walks through walls, buddy.
I got my sword, though.
Yeah, like what?
We're cool. Nearby the door the man was trying to pry open, investigators found a loaded shotgun and 10 shotgun shells, at which point Tim Woods decided it was time to sell the unoccupied home. In May of 2019, the house was sold for $16,000 after being on the market for 4 months, with no mention of the hauntings.
You guys can go pull up the Zillow link.
What is that? Just
so 6 South Wells Street. So then, of course, I had to run it through our program to see who the owner is.
Who is that? Do you know?
Okay, it's like not a real person from what I can tell. It might be an LLC.
I bet it is.
Because I like tried to do a reverse search from that person's name that's on there and there's nothing on there.
I bet someone was just like...
Because like he literally said, no one needs to live in this fucking house. And then he turned around and sold it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what type of paranormal investigator does that make you?
For 16 grand. Like, I know you weren't.
Well, he lost like $25,000 on it.
Yeah. Like, I know he wasn't huffing and puffing for 16,000.
Yeah.
Damn. That's fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Okay. 46. Okay. That's what it is. 46 South.
46 South Wells Street.
Wait. Why did they paint the
Wait. Trim? Did they paint it? Let me see.
Why is the trim neon green?
Okay. Augustus was asking for it with those fucking haunted numbers.
No, Augustus, I like have no sympathy for you.
You literally said, how haunted can I make this house?
Ew, why do they have to include that?
The literal chamber basement looking shit.
They probably have the fucking attic in here too.
Probably. I didn't look through the
entire
listing.
Imagine being the neighbors.
That live there. I would be like, don't ever look out the window at night.
They have most of the windows in the back boarded up. And I mean, is the chair in the corner so fucking necessary in the dining room?
That was Tim Woods. He did that.
Oh, for sure.
He did that. Him and Zach Bagans.
Damn.
So weird.
It looks something straight out of a horror movie, really. Like, truly.
Because it is.
Jesus.
Whew, Christ above. Well,
you're up.
This is a great story, Morgan. Thank you for that.
Thank you for that. So let's say you're looking to buy a house. Maybe the Wells house. Maybe you're feeling spooky this upcoming
spooky season.
Spooky season.
But please don't buy the Wells house.
You're going to need a down payment.
Yeah,
and
true.
The best way to start saving is by eliminating unwanted subscriptions through Rocket Money.
Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills all in one place.
With Rocket Money, you can easily cancel the ones that you don't want with just the press of a button. No more long hold times or annoying emails with customer service. Rocket Money does all the work for you.
And Rocket Money also lets you monitor all of your expenses in one place, recommends custom budgets based off of your past spending, and they'll even send you notifications when you've reached your spending limits.
With over 3 million users and counting, Rocket Money customers have saved an average of $720 a year, and that is huge when you're trying to save money for that Wells house.
For the Wells house, that is absolutely huge.
That you absolutely should not buy.
You know what I love about Rocket Money the most is even things that aren't a regular subscription, like, you know, we're typically thinking Netflix, Peacock,
Amazon,
your games that you play on your phone and forget about
Fishdom.
Fishdom landscape.
Oh God, Morgan, there's more than one?
Even if it's not a subscription like my nails or my lashes that I just go back every 3 weeks and get done, Rocket Money includes that in my monthly spending as one of my subscriptions, which I very much appreciate because sometimes I do be forgetting about
and
those.
Then you get to mark those as important.
Important. Thank you.
So stop wasting money on things that you don't use. And we're not talking about the nails. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions and manage your money the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/creepsandcrimes.
That's rocketmoney.com/creepsandcrimes. rocketmoney.com/creepsandcrimes. Okay, so the case I have for you guys today, like I wasn't like even prepared for. Well, good news, everybody. I have the Wills house open. One second.
The case that she has for you today is from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania.
And I definitely was calling it Wilkes Bar when I was reading it.
Well, I thought it was Wilkes. What did I say? Bear.
Yeah.
And then we looked up this like local newscast and is this guy, he's like,
I said it wrong.
Turns out it's actually Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Yep. I've been saying it wrong my whole life.
I don't know what's wrong with us and like, you're literally from the state of Pennsylvania. Can't say anything from Pennsylvania. Don't know.
Lancaster.
Lancaster. Can't be a part of it. Not for me. Anyways, for me. This was recommended by Brittany this past April. On March 15th, 2014, 21-year-old Chris Kremers and 22-year-old Lisa Ann Froon of the Netherlands landed in Panama, not like Panama City. Like
Panama.
Like the place, you know? And they were going to be there for 6 weeks. The two best friends decided following the graduation of Lisa Ann that they were going to dedicate their time away from school and home to learning Spanish and volunteering at a local school. Just to get their bearings, the girls arrived 2 weeks before their work started with the school. They ventured around the city, they met people, they tried all of the food, and did all of the sightseeing. During this time, they met two Dutch guys who were also visiting from the Netherlands.
The Dutch bros.
And the four of them like immediately hit it off. The group of four would go to dinner together, lunch, breakfast, do touristy adventures, hang out at the beach, go on hikes. Like they hung out together all the time. Once their first 2 weeks were over, on March 29th, Chris and Lisa Ann moved into their host family's house that they're going to be staying with for the next 4 weeks while they volunteered. After getting settled in at the home on April 1st, 2014, the two girls decided that they were going to take their host family dog with them on a hike. They told their host family that this hike was going to take them about 5 to 6 hours from the time that they started it until they finished it. But before they were going on the hike, they had plans to meet those two Dutch guys at the Dutch Bros. I'm going to start calling them that. Okay?
The Dutch Bros.
They had plans to meet the Dutch Bros for lunch. And then they were all going to go like sit on the beach, let their food digest, and then go on the hike. So the dog was coming to lunch, the beach, and the hike. Once they were done with everything, Chris and Lisa Ann left the guys. They said their goodbyes and left them from the beach and went to the volcano where they were going to be hiking. This was only just a short distance away. Like I said, the host family knew the entirety of the girls' plans, so they were really not worried when the sun began setting because, A, this was a super long hike and they didn't get started until way later in the day. So it was going to be night before they returned. But that night, the family grew concerned when their dog returned home without the girls. They still tried to like brush this off, being like maybe the dog was just like tired and dipped.
Or they lost the dog. The dog right, knew its way
ran
home,
off. And so it just like.
They're still looking for the dog.
Exactly. But as hours continued to pass and it kept getting later and later and later, the family decided to call Lisa Ann's family in the Netherlands after failed attempts to contact the girls. They asked the mom, like, hey, have you heard from the girls? They're like, yeah, I heard from them this morning, but not since. And so the family, the host family, was like trying not to overreact or be overbearing because they knew that the girls were A, adults, but B, they had been hanging out with these two guys. So like they could have gone back and met up with them again, got dinner, got drinks, whatever. So the host family decided that they were going to wait until the morning to raise any alarms. The next morning was Wednesday, April 2nd. Chris and Lisa Ann were scheduled to go on another hike, but this time was going to be guided by an expert.
So they paid for this.
They paid for this, right. And they were supposed to meet their guide at 8 a.m., but the girls didn't show. The tour guide called Lisa Ann's mother, who was the emergency contact, let her know that the girls didn't show and asked if she had heard from them. And mom again was like, no, not yet. This was incredibly concerning for everyone as the girls, since their arrival, had been sending daily text messages and updates to their families, which abruptly stopped on the morning of April 1st. It was not until the next day, Thursday, April 3rd, when the girls had still not returned home or contacted any family members or friends, that their host family decided to go to the Panama police and report them missing. That day, a search party was formed and went to the location of the hike that the girls had gone on April 1st, which is the volcano. However, they found nothing. On April 6, 2014, 5 days after the girls were last seen or heard from, their families flew to Panama with Dutch special agents to search for the girls and investigate their disappearances, bringing with them police dog units and detectives from the Netherlands. Immediately upon arrival, at the direction of the Dutch agents, their families set a reward for $30,000 for any information that would help them find the girls or any sightings of them. But oddly, like, nothing came out. No one came forward. They also initiated a large, full-scale search of the forest and the surrounding areas that lasted 10 days long. So they were doing a detailed search. And they were partnering with the local police in Panama for this. But once again, nothing. It was not until June 14th that investigators got their first break in the case. Approximately 95 miles away from the host family's house, a couple discovered a blue backpack which belonged to Lisa Ann. The couple immediately reported this to police, and the reason they knew is because her passport was inside and they had seen her name everywhere. And they noted that, like, this was a place that they walked every day. It's right near their house.
It wasn't there before.
It was not there any day before in the past 10 weeks. The location they discovered the backpack was on the banks of the, I'm really sorry for my pronunciation of this, but I think it's Calubre River near the village of Alto Romero. Police went to this location and they did a very detailed search of the area. A few miles down the river, on top of a rock on the opposite side of the river, like on the other riverbank from where the backpack was discovered, they found Chris's jean shorts that she was wearing on April 1st. But let's go back to that backpack. Inside, investigators discovered $83 in U.S. cash, Lisa Ann's passport, a water bottle that was like half full, a camera, like a digital camera, both Lisa Ann and Chris's phones, two pairs of sunglasses, and two bras, all of which were in great condition. Nothing looked wrong with them. They were fine. The key piece of evidence in this backpack, though, were those phones and that camera, which would allow investigators to map out the timeline of their activities. But while looking through the phone, a very concerning discovery was made. It seemed like the girls left the beach for their hike at approximately 11 a.m. At around the 6-hour mark of their hike, which would be when they were nearing the end, Chris called the number 112 on her iPhone at 4:39 p.m. This is the emergency number used in the Netherlands. 12 minutes later, at 4:51 p.m., Lisa Ann's phone also called 112. But due to the lack of service in the area, neither of the calls went through along with any other call attempt that was made beyond this. The next day, April 2nd, at 6:58 a.m., Lisa Ann's phone called 112 again. An hour and 16 minutes later, Chris's phone dialed 112 at 8:14 a.m. This was the only time Chris's phone was used that day. Then, at 10:52 a.m., Lisa Ann's phone attempted to call both 112 and 911. At both 1:50 p.m. and 4:19 p.m., Lisa Ann used her phone to check for a signal. It is believed but not confirmed that she also tried to call 112 and 911 once again, during which it seems like she was able to get the call to connect for just a second, and then it dropped. Starting at 7:36 a.m. on April 3rd, Lisa Ann's phone was turned off, and Chris's phone was used to make one attempt to call 911 at 9:32 a.m. and to check for a signal on two separate occasions, the first being 11:46 a.m. and the last being 3:59 p.m. On the morning of April 4th, Lisa Ann's phone was turned back on and used to check for a signal at 4:50 a.m. and at 5 a.m., after which Lisa Ann's phone died. Then at 10:16 a.m. and 1:42 p.m., Chris's phone was used to check for a signal. On April 5th, Chris checked for a signal at 10:50 a.m. and 1:37 p.m. But what was really interesting was that check at 10:50 a.m. was the last time that Chris unlocked her phone using her PIN. On April 6th, Chris made two more attempts to check for signal at both 10:26 a.m. and 1:37 p.m., but she was still not using her PIN to unlock the phone. Between April 7th and April 11th, there were 77 attempts made to access Chris's iPhone. And what I mean by this is they cannot tell if they were just like turning the phone on to check for a signal or if someone was attempting to unlock the phone. Like the PIN was going in, but it was being denied.
Okay.
But investigators did note that starting on the 6th, the wrong PIN was entered to access the phone several times for that like entire time span.
Whoa.
At 10:51 a.m. on April 11th, there was another signal check from Chris's phone, still without unlocking the phone. And just an hour and 5 minutes later, at 11:36 a.m., her phone was turned off for the final time with the battery level being at 22%.
That's a long-lasting iPhone battery.
No, really, that's what I thought. I was like, they had to have had a battery pack because there's no way my iPhone. I mean, what was this? This was an iPhone 3? No shot.
No.
No shot that was going to work.
No, probably no airplane mode then either.
Right. Another incredibly helpful piece of evidence that they were able to examine from the discovery of the backpack was Lisa Ann's digital camera. Investigators discovered 10 photos that the girls took on that digital camera on April 1st. With the final one being taken at 1:54 p.m. This is what investigators refer to as the last, quote, normal photo the girls took. It was a photo of Chris turned around looking back at the camera after crossing a small stream. And I'm going to show this to you, Morgan.
Okay.
Okay.
Looks like two girls on a hike.
Right. And I got this photo from strangeoutdoors.com, and I'm going to post all the photos that I'm talking about on our Instagram episode 151 announcement. The image number was 508, and I'm going to come back to this and why it's so important to know that it was image 508. Unfortunately, though, the camera did not have GPS location markers, so they had no idea where these photos were taken at. This specific photo was taken just under 3 hours prior to the first attempt to call 112.
Okay.
Of the 133 photos on this digital camera, 33 of those were random pictures taken prior to April 1st. 10 of these photos were the normal pictures that the girls took on their hiking trip on April 1st, and they were labeled image 499 through image 508. Even though there were only a total of 133 photos on this camera, the images were numbered based on how many photos that the camera has taken. So even though Lisa Ann had deleted or downloaded all of the 466 photos that were taken on the camera before the trip, they remained in the data, which is important. But the remaining 90 photos that were taken after April 1st caught the detective's attention. These were taken on the camera between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. in the early morning hours of April 8th, 7 days after the girls went missing. Of the 90 photos, most of them are blurry with the camera's flash on, and they were taken approximately 2 minutes apart each. There are some photos of just like random pieces of trash or brush, a ravine, what looks like to be a river, some woods, one's like of toilet paper, they think. But one of these photos looks like it was taken. Well, they can confirm that this is the back of Chris's head, but many people believe that it shows blood in the bottom right-hand corner. And again, I'm going to post these on Instagram for you guys to see. I'm going to show them to Morgan. And I got all of these from this entire Reddit thread dedicated to this case where they have compiled every single photo in a Google album that's shared to the public. And I'm going to link that for you guys. Okay, so here's like what most of the photos looked like. Just like random. It looks like a finger's in front of it.
Right.
Then we have like a random piece of trash. This is what they think is maybe this toilet
looks
paper.
Like water all over the screen.
Right. Like it's like bugs maybe reflecting on the flash, maybe water, who knows. Then we've got like the ravine, and then this is Chris's head. Now they think that the blood is in the bottom right hand corner. Like they don't know if this is on the side of her head, the front of her head, the back of her head. I think that looks like an earring to me.
Kind of actually looks like her hair is in front of her face.
Almost. Yeah. But like you can't see, but I can see like where the roots are touching, I feel like. But I can't determine it.
It looks like right here on a shirt with an earring and the hair in front of your face. Because the back of your hair.
Wait, what's that? I didn't even see that.
What?
Oh, it's just a reflection of hair.
So you think that's the roots coming out right there?
Right there. Looks like a cow lick. But like she had her hair up in the pictures that we saw. So why is her hair down?
Right. I don't know. That is odd.
Okay, that's where they think the blood is. Like
so just a little discolored. A little
yeah, just discoloration
there.
Down there. But of the 100 photos taken between April 1st and April 8th, one was missing. Like I said, the first image of them hiking was image 499. All of the other photos were numbered in the order following, with the final normal photo being 508. Yet that is only 9 of the 10 photos that were taken on April 1st, because the next photo after image 508 is labeled image 510. So where is image 509 that was shown to be taken on April 1st? Dutch specialists examined the camera and the SD card to try and recover image 509. Typically, this would be no big deal for a specialist to do, assuming that it was manually deleted off of the camera by just pressing the delete button, because that actually does not delete the entirety of the file. Nice to know.
Good to know.
Good to know.
That's why our camera doesn't fucking work.
Right. However, the specialists were unable to recover image 509. So what does this mean? Knowing that it would be impossible for the camera to just skip a number when shooting photos, the fact that they were unable to recover this image means only one thing. Someone connected the camera to a computer or another device and erased the photo that way, thus making it irretrievable and removing the time that the image was taken. There is also more evidence that indicates the camera had been manipulated with using another device. There are discrepancies between the time that image 507 and image 508 were taken. When looking at the time stated on the camera itself, it shows that these two images were taken 8 seconds apart from each other. Whereas when you look at the metadata and when it was examined by these specialists, it shows that the photos were taken 50 seconds apart from each other. So Morgan, I'm going to show you these two photos. Again, you guys can see these on our Insta. It's of Chris. She's crossing. It's before she crossed the creek and then after she crossed the creek. I already showed you the first one. So these are the two.
Okay.
So the only way that the metadata and the camera time would be different is if someone tried to manually change it. Maybe fucking up, not meaning to mess with that one and just trying to fix it back, but still did.
Yeah, altered for sure.
Altered for sure. All in all, though there were no GPS locations retrieved from the camera's photos, it shows that the girls made it to the overlook of the Continental Divide, which was like the main point that people do this hike for. And then it looks like they began exploring, thus the photos that were taken on the creek and so on. Based off of some of the images taken on April 8th, locals believe that the girls were deep in the jungle near like ravines and rivers. So you have to go far from this volcano to get where it looks like they were, possibly closer to the location that their belongings were found than where they started this hike. Unfortunately, though, nothing is definitive and they can't determine exactly where they were. So investigators continued to search this area for more clues. On June 19th, just a short distance away, half of a human pelvis and a boot with a foot still inside of it were found. Trigger warning for some graphic details, just discussing remains in the state of them. In the surrounding area, investigators recovered 33 more human bones. And just to note, some reports say that the shorts that belonged to Chris were found at the same time as the bones, which is why they found the bones. Others say that the shorts were found around the same time as the backpack. And because of that, like, long distance between each other, because they were like miles down from each other, that's how they found the bones, was like searching that area between. Okay. Also, some reports say that the bones were found just 5 days after the backpack, which is June 19th, which is what most reports say. But others say that it was 2 months after they found the backpack. And I don't think that's correct.
Yeah.
I don't think that's like, I know that they were being recovered between June 19th and August 21st. So that would be 2 months after the backpack was discovered. So maybe that's when they found like the last of them.
Probably.
But yeah, just so we're all clear. Testing revealed that the bones did belong to Lisa Ann and Chris. So they had passed.
Fuck, dude.
Yeah. The ones that still had some flesh attached to them belonged to Lisa Ann, which were the majority. Whereas the bones that did not have any flesh on them, specifically the half of the pelvis being one of them, belonged to Chris. And this was incredibly odd. According to forensic anthropologists, it is common for human remains to have small amounts of flesh still attached to the bone when naturally decomposing. However, for Chris's bones, this made no sense. They looked like they had been bleached, but not by the sun. And there were no environmental elements that would affect the bones in this area to cause them to be bleached in the way that they look to be. Specifically, they are referring to the half of the pelvis that was found. Despite the fact that the anthropologist noted that, quote, there are no discernible scratches of any kind on the bones, neither of natural or cultural origins. There are no marks on these bones at all, end quote. a human pelvis, especially one that belongs to a younger person, does not break in half during the process of natural decomposition. Furthermore, there is joint tissue on human pelvises that remains intact for years during the natural decomposition process. There is really no explanation for this anomaly because there were no markings. It is not likely that the pelvis was broken in half by a predator of any kind, human, animal, so on and so forth. And they can't even attribute the bleaching to the water since the remains were found near a riverbank in the rainforest, because if this was the doing of water, the bones would have had water markings on them. Meaning, if we compared the remains of Lisa Ann versus Chris's, Lisa Ann's remains were in a very early stage of decomposition, whereas Chris's remains were in an extremely advanced state. To put this in easy terms and like give you an example of what exactly they compare Chris's decomposition state to, when they put her bones beside someone that was discovered after being deceased for more than 2 years, Chris's were incredibly more bleached than theirs.
Whoa. And at this point, they were only missing for how long?
They went missing on April 1st, technically.
This is June.
This is June. So there's no way.
Mm-hmm.
AKA, someone had to have bleached Chris's bones chemically. So they ran tests on her bones, and the findings revealed that they had been bleached by phosphorus or lime, neither of which are found locally in the soil. However, Lisa Ann's remains did not come up positive for any sort of chemical compounds. So if this were to be the doing of an attacker or attackers, why only chemically speed up the decomposition process for one of the two girls? Other than the bleaching of Chris's remains, there were no other signs or pieces of evidence that showed that foul play could possibly be involved. Lisa Ann's boot with the foot still inside of it did not show any signs of blood on it. There were no signs that her foot had been like taken off or removed by any sort of weapon or tool. It just looked like it had broken on its own, and the ankle had broken on its own and floated away. And it is pretty typical for feet to simply just detach themselves from the body, especially when they're in a tightly laced shoe like hers was, like a hiking boot. So this is a pretty common thing, but it's still like really weird.
Yeah.
Investigators searched through the host family's home, through all the girls' belongings, and even read through their journals. Nothing indicated that anything they did that day was really planned. Like, they didn't say, like, these are plans for today or anything like that. There was nothing that indicated that they weren't planning on returning home. Like, their stuff was laid out, like, put to the side. Their, you know, shit was thrown on the bed, just like how girls leave. So it just really made no sense that they would have possibly wandered off on their own accord, as people kind of started wondering. But there were some interesting entries made on the morning of April 1st in Chris's diary that I want to read to you. And I'm going to start from the entry that she made on Sunday, March 30th. Just a side note, this was translated from Dutch to English, so bear with me. And then for the purpose of understanding the entirety of both of the girls' experiences, I'm also going to read the translation of Lisa Ann's entries from these days. Okay. This is from Chris's journal. Sunday, March 30th. Wow. How much has changed since the last time I wrote something? We are now staying with the host family. The last days on Bocas, we especially enjoyed the beach, good food, and going out. We had quite a bit of sleep to catch up on. The time we had in Bocas was really amazing, and we really had a holiday there, so it felt like a goodbye, because we probably won't be going back there. I have never seen a place with such beautiful coastline and palm trees and such really super. Yesterday, we arrived in Bocuit. I can never say the actual name of the location that they were, guys, and I apologize, but it's B-O-Q-U-E-T-E. The journey actually went very well. The van even had air conditioning. We also found the school in no time. We had to get out earlier than the other people, so it was a bit strange because we got off almost in the middle of nowhere. The school called the family where we would stay. It was really exciting to wait for them because you really hope that there's a click. Fortunately, it went well. Last night, we had to get used to the new situation. You suddenly stay with a family that you are not yet a part of. You know nothing about their habits, and you actually don't know how to behave. On top of that, you can hardly exchange a word with them, so you cannot express how you feel. We were also really exhausted yesterday, but after a good night's sleep, all is not so bad anymore. So, Once we have stayed here for a while, I'm sure that it will be all right. The family is very sweet. The mother's name is Miriam, and the eldest daughter is blank. Miriam also has two other children, blank and blank. The oldest daughter also has two children, blank and blank. The youngest of her children is one, and the other is almost three. They are all very friendly and used to visitors who cannot speak Spanish. The eldest daughter does speak English, but for our Spanish, it is better that very little that we speak as little English as possible. We also went to BOQUETE, that location, today. Very nice and cute village. Tomorrow we start in Aura. Very curious to how this will go. Okay, so that was March 30th. This is Tuesday, April 1st, the day they went missing. Today was a strange day. We were going to the project for the first time. We were quite nervous and found it exciting. When we arrived, we introduced ourselves, expecting the woman to know who we were because she was expecting us after all. But that was not the case. She showed no sign of recognition and said that it was not possible now to start volunteer work there and that we should come back next week. She was very unfriendly and not at all warm or cordial. So when we left again, we were very disappointed. We were not received openly and did not feel welcomed at all, unexpectedly to us. We also did not understand what exactly was going on. Then we went back to the language school to tell our story and to get some answers. It turned out that there was no place slash work for us after all this week, so we couldn't even start yet. The school also found it very strange because we had planned things months in advance. Then we had to wait all day for the, I guess, the head of the school to hear if we could be a part of another project for this week. Eventually, we heard that she was not able to speak to the volunteer coordinator yet, so she wasn't sure. But she did think that that we would be able to start there. She also said that it was a nice project, and after reading about it, we also became enthusiastic about it. Tomorrow, they will try to get a hold of that woman, and suppose that we like it there, then we can also just stay there. Because we both don't really want to go back to Aura anymore, because we didn't feel welcomed at all there, and it was a really huge disappointment. Let's hope that the other project is really fun. Well, let's go with the Panama flow then. So they had a weird day.
Yeah.
That morning.
Weird interaction with a woman.
Right. Lisa Ann did not make an entry on the 1st, but we do have one from the 30th and the 31st. So Sunday, March 30th, she said, okay, the tears are gone, but it is still strange. I still feel like an intruder in this family. Delicious French toast for breakfast. Explored the area in the afternoon, which was nice. What a world of difference with Bocas. Here it is windy and everywhere around you there are mountains. Magnificent. You can go here almost anywhere for $60. I think that translated correctly. In the afternoon, we also went to the school to check out some excursions. That will be fun. We mainly eat rice here, by the way. Tomorrow's our first day in Aura. Very exciting. Then on Monday, March 31st, our first day was a disaster. As we arrived on Aura in time, we were not even recognized or given a friendly welcome. The only thing we hear is that there is no job for us today, and we are only welcome there next week. What? We returned to the Spanish school disappointed, and indeed, the daycare only had work for us next week. But of course, we don't buy anything for that. Maybe we will be able to start tomorrow at blank. Fingers crossed. To alleviate our disappointment, we went to Sagrid for a full body massage. So some enjoyment. Another day tomorrow. Bye. Okay, so
So Monday must have been the first day.
Right.
They both had a really bad, uneasy experience.
Mm-hmm.
But did you pick up on Chris's? Wait, who went first?
Chris's.
So that was Lisa Ann.
Mm-hmm.
Did you pick up on her saying like she feels like a stranger?
Yeah. So we can see it. Like they were having a great time. It looks like they were getting really close with the locals.
Not good.
They were, you know, having to settle in, getting used to living with a family that only speaks Spanish. And then going from like living in hotels and like doing whatever you want to living with a family. Like that's a shock.
Mm-hmm.
We could see that there was like a big transition trouble period going on from the time that they moved in there. Unfortunately, due to the condition of the girls' remains, neither the Dutch nor the Panama forensic teams could determine their cause of deaths, with Dutch officials concluding that their deaths were likely an accident. The leading theory was that they were lost and attempted to cross over a monkey cable bridge, but slipped and fell into the river, being swept away by the current and drowned. However, Dutch PIs and actually some, and by some I mean a lot of the Panama police force, believe that foul play was absolutely involved due to the evidence that was found. I think if we're looking at the evidence solely, 100%.
Right.
In Panama, their deaths were first to be cleared the result of a homicide after an abduction, which was odd.
Well, the boys.
Right. But later they were changed to accidental. And also, I find it odd, like when you read those journals, like they went to a completely different location. So were the boys going there too, or did they come meet them, or what was that about?
Right. So do we hear any more about the boys?
That's really it for the facts.
Really?
Yeah, that is really it for the facts in this case.
Is it solved? No.
No. Well, and they so think it's solved, but what it's- I want to do is I want to go through other findings and like pose the theoretical questions that are tossed around. When I get to the end, I'm going to do like what most people believe the theories are. And then I'm going to explain to you why you're probably like, what do you mean that this is like the craziest case ever? Because this just seems
no, I'm
like
with you. It's fucking
whack.
Nuts.
Like, I'm going to explain that there's a lot more to this. Okay. So here are some odd findings. The girls were scheduled to go on that guided hike the very next day. So why would they go on a 5 to 6 hour long hike after spending that morning getting food, hanging out with their friends, right, going to the
I'll
beach?
I'll be damned if I'm doing that 2 days
and then
in a row.
Wrap it up.
And already exhausted and needed to relax.
Already tired. They were writing about being exhausted. And so why would they go drain themselves in the sun and then knowing that this was going to take them 5 to 6 hours? These are smart girls. They're not going to go knowing that it's going to be dark before they get back.
Right.
You know, it's just kind of odd the way that that panned out.
But I would do it if some boys were asking me to.
Exactly. Because this was not mentioned in the journal and these girls were such type A level planners with everything that they did and every adventure that they, I mean, you saw just how like torn up they were about the fact that the plan wasn't going to, you know, right, the plan was going awry.
The plan was off by at least one day and that was enough that to throw them off.
They were like freaking out over it. So the question is, was this hike planned before going to lunch in the beach or was this a plan that they made at lunch in the beach? It is never made clear if the Dutch guys were questioned, if the Dutch bros were questioned.
That's what I'm wondering.
Or any alibis were cleared. Was it possible that they went on the hike with the girls?
Right.
But another thing is, which is reported to be fact, is that the girl, this is like a fact, the girls warned their other friends in the area, like that they were meeting, that they were not going to be doing hikes in this new area where they were building the school alone without a guide. Because it was very dangerous. So why would they go alone?
Right.
This is really interesting. Their bones, Lisa, Anne, and Chris's bones, collectively only made up 30 of the 33 bones that were discovered. The remaining three belong to three different human individuals that are unidentified.
What?
So who do those bones belong to?
Right.
And like, why are we not even more concerned about that?
Yeah.
Number
one. Who else has been missing in the area?
So the next thing is talking about some of those photos. No other photos since the time that they arrived in Panama were deleted from their phones or the camera. So why would they delete image 509, which would be the only photo that they deleted on the entirety of that trip?
Right.
So many people believe that the Panama authorities who got the camera first
deleted
this photo to hide something. There was something that was in that photo that they did not want the public to see. If so, why and what next? If the Dutch guys went, the Dutch bros went, could they have deleted image 509 because it was proof that they went hiking with the girls because there was no other proof that they would have been there otherwise?
Right. And there's no proof that they didn't.
Exactly. Also, going off the photos, the host family's dog was supposedly with them that entire day, right? Did not return home until after dark without the girls. So why is he not in any of the photos? He's not in a single photo of the girls with the girls on April 1st. Also, would the girls feel comfortable enough to just let this dog that they met 3 days ago
just run home?
Just fucking get separated from them?
Right.
Just let it go. Like, they don't even know it. They don't know that if it, you know, knows how to get home.
Right.
So that's odd. But like, we can't even say that maybe it ran away and that's what made them get lost.
Or dogs can sense out bad juju and said, fuck this, come on, let's go. And they're like, we're staying. And their dog's like, fuck you, I'm out.
Yeah, but like if we went hiking with a dog that we just met 3 days before of a host family.
Be attached
family,
to my hip.
I would have that thing.
I would chase it down. I would chase it through the rainforest.
I would follow it out of the rainforest before.
Yeah.
Like I ever, even if they told me like, hey, he'll roam on his own. I would still not. I would just be so worried, especially since they were worried about like, we don't know how to behave. You know, we want to make sure that we have a good relationship with them. Like, you would just let their dog just go.
Right.
So was the dog even with them in the first place?
Yeah.
That's
or did
the
someone
main
else
question.
Drive the dog back to the house and
drop it off. Right. But still, it wasn't any of the photos. Next, many witnesses saw the girls hiking that day, saw the girls at the beach, saw the girls at lunch. But all the witnesses that saw them on the hiking trail that day give a completely different timeline of the day. And I saw some sources that talked about this witness account timeline. They were all incredibly different from each other. So I'm not even going to like report on it. because I don't even know which one's true or which ones are real. Like, I don't want to report on it wrong, but
could
that is something
pictures,
interesting.
Like, if I pulled out my camera, my digital camera, my old one, back, what year was this again?
2014. It was a Canon.
Okay. If I pulled out my 2014 camera that I had, that fucking date is always wrong. The timestamp was always wrong.
Right.
So could this have been a hike from a different time? And like,
no,
something
that's what
totally
they were wearing
different?
That day.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what they were wearing that day. And it, I believe it was right. Like, I think they probably tested it and like took the pictures, or if it was wrong, they knew which, cause you know, it's still like the right day.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you have to like, you know, like mine says that we're in 2015 and that today is like October 30th, but we know that looking at the picture and looking at what I'm wearing and other things, that it was definitely not October 30th.
Right. 2015.
Right. So with that witness account statements being very different from every other piece of evidence that they have about the timeline of the girl's day, does this further support the theory that the camera had been manipulated with using another device? And if so, like, who got this backpack, took it to their house, put it into their computer, hooked it up, did all this shit, then went and put it back?
Right.
And why do they do it 10 weeks later? But that does align with what the couple that found it said. Like, we hike here every single morning. We walk here every day. It's our nighttime routine. And we just found this backpack. It was not here 10 weeks before. It just showed up. It wasn't wet. It didn't look like it was in the water. All the electronics work. The cheap sunglasses are fine. This is a cheap backpack. It's fine. It's not beat to hell. It's not even dirty. It's clean. And there's two bras in it.
Mm-hmm.
So this was planted.
Right.
Which would make sense.
If it was foul play and you're trying, well, one, how the back, it had to be because how the backpack get there.
Right.
But two, if it was foul play, why would you try to burn your body, but then strategically place your evidence of the girls being
right? Like, you could have not put that out there anywhere
at all,
and no one would have ever found it.
Right.
Okay. So going back to the location where they were hiking versus where they were found, just to know, the backpack was discovered an 8-hour walk away from the location that the last photos were taken on the camera, that little creek. That is 8 hours away. It's a 10-mile walk. And it's like virtually, it's not impossible, but like to do on foot, you would have to be like very determined to get that far away because of the terrain just being
knowing that you have to
insufferable.
Come back.
Right. Knowing that you have to go back. So it's not like they intentionally walked that far to go take a dip in a river.
Right.
It was an 8-hour walk just there for them to have to turn around and go back.
Right.
Between where they were hiking on the at the volcano and where this was found, and supposedly like some of the pictures that they were that were found from April 8th when they were kind of wandering in the forest, there are various sheds and small wooden cabin like structures along the river, along the hiking trails, for people that if they get lost, they can stay in there. So why would the girls not take shelter in any of these locations if they were lost? They did go investigate these and there were no signs that they had ever been in there.
The fuck?
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, I would have sucked shelter immediately, seeked shelter immediately.
Me too. Now, this is where we get into some weird shit going on with the Panama authorities, who have the jurisdiction of this case. They have not released the girls' full autopsies. Fingerprints were discovered on the camera and on the girls' phones. They have never been tested, or if they have, the fingerprints have not been released as to who they belong to. No testing was done. If so, it was never released on the water bottle that was found. Was the water inside of this water bottle, which again was half full, from a river or creek in the area, or was it from the store? Because if it's the store that they, if it's from the, if it's the water that the water bottle came with, then this would tell us that they were not actually lost, because they would have drank all of the water that they had from the store and had to fill it up in the creek.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was from there, then they were 100%, like, there's foul play involved for them not to feel the need after 7 days being lost in the woods for sure.
To chug that water.
To chug that water. Also, was any testing performed on the rim of the bottle to see if the saliva DNA matched Chris or Lisa Ann? If there was, no one's ever been told about it. It's never been released.
What the fuck?
Lastly, I want to talk about the girls' phones. And I don't know if you guys caught it, probably because like I'm saying it, you probably didn't. But if you saw it on paper like I did when I was writing it, it was the first thing that stood out to me. And I'm going to get to that at the end. Number one, there were videos and photos on the phone from earlier that day and the days leading up. So why would they only use their camera to take photos while on this hike? And we could even say that they were using the camera photos of the random pieces of garbage and shit to retrace their steps because they were lost.
Right. And in case the phone died, then they have the camera. It's fully charged.
Right.
We can use those as landmarks.
They didn't take any photos of them hiking.
right
on the phone, but they did go back and check the phone and there was no deleted photos. So that was kind of odd. Like yeah. they did it when they were like that morning, but I don't think it was anything from the hike itself. Maybe they just put their phones in the backpack. I do that sometimes. Number two, some people theorize that the incorrect pins on Chris's phone was due to the fact that she may have possibly died as a result of that injury that is speculated to be shown in the photos from April 8th between 1 and 4 a.m. Therefore, this would mean that Lisa Ann was the reason why the pin was being terminated. But why would she not have memorized, while being lost, her best friend's pin?
Right.
I know your pin. You right. know my pin.
I know all my friends' pins.
And like, by the way, if we're getting lost, I'm saying take the fucking pin off. You right. know what I mean? Like, or tell me what it is.
Yeah.
That's just odd. I don't think it would have been Lisa Ann.
I don't think it was her either.
Okay, number three. According to police, there were no attempts made by the girls to send any sort of text messages or emails or even write down anything in the journal or notes app on their phone to their families or to their friends. So if the girls would have been lost, we know that they have all these journal entries and all this stuff and they record everything. Why would they not leave a message for their family? And if they sent a text message, it had a better chance at going through than a call. Like, even if it was just like SOS at this place, need help.
Right.
And they didn't attempt to send any text messages. These are 21 and 22 year old girls.
Right.
2014.
Right.
And I really do think that they would have tried it if they were the ones. I mean, we know that they were the ones opening their phones up until the 6th, at least. I think it was the 6th.
Yeah. Was Touch ID a thing?
I don't think. Maybe fingerprint. It was when it first came out.
Just wondering, because you can always use a fingerprint.
Right. Maybe. Who knows?
Face ID definitely wasn't.
Right. Finally, I don't know if you guys caught the timeline. This is what I was talking about. I don't know if you guys caught the timeline of their calls and their checks for service. According to the phone records released by the authorities, but basically, they would check for service or attempt to call at, if not the exact time, but at least around the exact time every day when they were missing. They did not have watches, though. They had no other way to tell time. So what are the actual chances of it being a coincidence that it was almost the exact same time every day that they would check?
That is weird.
So like, I'll compare this for you, and I'm also going to put this that I got from strangeoutdoors.com, I believe it was what it from. I'll give proper credit in the on the photo on Instagram. You guys can go look at this. So basically, the first day, the second day, they were not the same. Okay. On April 2nd, she attempts to call at 1:56. On April 3rd, she attempts to check for signal at 1:50.
That is just like almost a minute.
Then on April 4th, Chris's phone checks for signal at 10:16 a.m., which matches with Lisa Ann's attempt on the 2nd. That was at 10:53. So then 10:16 the next day, she checks for signal, nothing. At 1:42, just like the day prior, they check for signal. On April 5th, they check at 10:50 a.m. and then at 1:37 p.m. on Chris's phone. The next day, April 6th, Chris's phone is used to check at 10:26 a.m. and the exact same time, 1:37 p.m.
Because whoever has them's got a fucking routine and they're
like an alarm leaving. Were set, right? On April 11th, the last day that the phones were used, Chris's phone checked at 10:51. That's only a 20-minute difference from the last time, or a 40-minute difference from the last time. Just an hour and 5 minutes later, the phone was turned off.
That to me seems like if they had a captor, mm-hmm. maybe that captor had to, or that kidnapper had to, had a routine every day mm-hmm. that they had to go check on their mom or check on somebody else at 10 and 1.
Right.
And that's the only time the girls could get their phones. Maybe he didn't know, she, he, they didn't know that they had their phones on them.
Right. And then another thing is like, okay, 10 and 1. Those are not like, it's not like sunrise, sunset that they're checking their phones. It's mm-hmm. not like it's like when the sun is at the highest peak, when it's noon, you think it's noon. It's not like that. These are like random times of the fucking day.
Mm-hmm.
Like 10 and 1, like if I had to pick two times I was going to check my phone once a day, I would do sunrise and sunset because that was the, that would be the only fucking time that I would know what fucking time it was.
Right.
And yeah. was, no, am I even facing like, the right direction?
It sounds like that was their only opportunity to check.
To check. So lastly, I'm going to wrap us up with the main, probably most like overall view of what the main theories are. Number one, both girls got injured and eventually starved to death without sufficient food or water. Number two, one of the girls got injured while the other girl went to go look for help and possibly got lost. Therefore, the other one died, but their remains were found together. So that doesn't really track. The girls both got lost and eventually starved to death or became injured later. Lastly, the girls were victims of foul play. For the people that believe that foul play was involved in their deaths and disappearances, many people believe that it was either they were kidnapped by locals, they were murdered by a tour guide, because why would they not take a tour, a guide with them mm-hmm. on this one? Or they were killed by a gang or captured and killed by cannibals. I don't know of any like cannibalistic tribes that lived in the area. There was not really reports on it, but there's a lot more to this case, and it's mainly fueled by theories. Like, I mean, half the shit that I just told you was mainly theories at the end, and it would take me an entire another episode to like
right.
take you down each of the theories in detail. But because of the rabbit hole that they came from, I do not want to report on them in fact, like just on an overall episode with the public, number one, especially with the amount of theory and speculation that I've already gone into in this case. So if you want to learn more, I'm going to link the Reddit thread on this that has all the other links, and I'm going to give you the direct link to the photos. There are pictures of the bones, so I do want to let you know about that. And then there's various other sources. I probably used about 50,000. So if you really want them, you can email me and I'll send them to you.
I mean, to me, the bones are how the remains were found is proof that this is foul play. And I feel like it has more than one. They had more than one killer.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it was like one person tried it one way.
And then right.
another killer tried a different way. Or it could be the same trying different methods
right.
of killing.
And like.
And decomposition and. Trying to rid of the remains.
Yeah. And some of these theories, again, going back to witness, they talk about seeing a person with them, seeing two guys with them, saying that there were photos that were leaked from of them with two guys that looked like the Dutch Bros from a random person's phone. Then there's also another murder that happened in the exact same area around the exact same time, which would take me an entire another episode to get into. But there's just like really not enough that I can find like good sources for to like actually report right, on it.
Especially because it's international.
Right. There's so much on this. Like, I really wish I could do a lot more without kind of teetering the line of just like fucking craziness.
Yeah.
But
it's fucking sad. That's scary.
Yeah. But I really do encourage you, if you want to know more about this, you need to go read about it, because it is probably one of the most like intensely chaotically investigated cases I've ever read about or researched in this entire time. So I'm sorry. I feel like I was kind of all over the place, but I was trying to reel in like this already giant web and like give you the most specific points and best information that I could.
Mm-hmm.
But my God, it is probably one of the craziest cases.
Yeah, that was fucking nuts. Sorry, I'm really chillaxed over here.
Yeah, guys. All right, it's late. We gotta record something else. So we'll call you back. We'll call you back next Thursday.
Call you tomorrow.
I'll call you later. Love you, bye.
Love you, bye.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.